So I want to start today with the word, one single ancient Greek word that, I think, contains maybe the most dangerous idea humanity ever had to reckon with.
Okay, I'm already nervous. What's the word?
Pharmakon.
That sounds like pharmacy. Like where I get my allergy meds.
Exactly. And that's the whole point. Pharmakon is the root of pharmacy, pharmaceutical, pharmacology, all of it. But here's the thing. In ancient Greek, pharmakon didn't mean medicine. It didn't mean poison either. It meant both, simultaneously, the same word, no distinction.
Wait, so the ancient Greeks just didn't differentiate between medicine and poison?
They couldn't, because for most of human history, the line between the two was completely invisible. The same plant that cured your fever could stop your heart. The same mineral that healed a wound could destroy your liver. And humanity spent literally thousands of years, wars, murders, entire political dynasties, trying to figure out where that line was.
So today we're doing the history of figuring out when something heals you versus when it kills you.
The history of poison and toxicology. And honestly, remember when we talked about alchemists accidentally inventing science, back in episode 122?
Yeah, the liquid gold episode, where they were chasing immortality and kept stumbling into actual chemistry.
So this is the sequel to that, because one of the biggest things alchemy accidentally invented was the entire field of pharmacology, the science of drugs, and the way they got there is one of the wildest stories we've ever covered.
All right, I'm in. Where do we start?
We start with a king who was so afraid of being poisoned that he turned himself into a human science experiment. Mithridates VI, king of Pontus, around 135 BC.
Pontus being?
Modern-day Turkey, roughly, and his story starts dark. His father, the previous king, was assassinated by poisoning. Classic ancient world power move. And young Mithridates, is a teenager at this point, starts to suspect that his own mother is slowly poisoning his meals to put a more controllable heir on the throne.
His own mother, that's a rough adolescence.
So he does something wild. He flees into the wilderness, just disappears into the mountains for years. And while he's out there, he starts experimenting on himself. He begins ingesting sublethal doses of every known poison he can find. A little bit of arsenic. A little bit of hemlock. Building up his tolerance. Dose by dose by dose.
Okay, so this is, and I know exactly what this is. This is Witcher potions.
Go ahead.
In The Witcher, right, Geralt drinks these potions that would straight up kill a normal person. They're toxic. The game literally has a toxicity meter that fills up as you chug them. But because witches have been mutated, they've been through the trial of the grasses, this brutal, or chemical process, those same poisons become power-ups, night vision, faster reflexes, enhanced strength. The poison is the power, but only because his body has been specifically adapted to handle it.
And that's Mithridates. He's essentially running the trial of the grasses on himself, voluntarily, over years. And he doesn't stop at just building tolerance. He creates what he calls the Mithridatium, a universal antidote made of over 50 ingredients. This thing becomes legendary. When the Roman general Pompey finally conquers his kingdom decades later, one of the first things Pompey does is find the recipe, have it translated, and ship it back to Rome. It was that valuable.
So did it work? Was he actually immune to poison?
Here's the most incredible part. Yes, it worked too well. When the Romans finally cornered him, this is 63 BC, he's an old man now, his empire is crumbling. Mithridates decides he'd rather die than be paraded through Rome as a conquered king, so he tries to kill himself with poison.
No.
And he can't die. The poison doesn't work. He'd made himself so resistant over a lifetime of microdosing that the thing he needed most, a quick death, was the one thing poison couldn't give him anymore. He had to ask a bodyguard to run him through with a sword.
That is genuinely tragic. He spent his whole life mastering poison, and the final boss was himself.
And his practice gave us a word that's still used in medicine today. Mithridatism, the concept of building tolerance through graduated exposure, which, by the way, is basically how allergy immunotherapy works. Your allergist gives you tiny increasing doses of the thing you're allergic to until your body stops overreacting.
So modern medicine is just doing the Mithridates speedrun. That's incredible.
But I'm guessing not everyone was using poison for self-defense.
Oh no. Let me introduce you to Locusta, professional poisoner, ancient Rome, around 54 AD.
Professional. Like, that was her job title.
Essentially, she was from Gaul, modern France, and she was so skilled at crafting poisons that when Empress Agrippina needed Emperor Claudius dead, she had Locust to pull out of prison specifically for the job. Locust delays mushrooms with poison. Claudius ate them at dinner. Dead.
Death by mushroom. That's a terrible way to find out the appetizer was off.
Then Emperor Nero takes power, and is so impressed with Locust's work that he keeps her on retainer. Like a court poisoner, she kills his stepbrother Britannicus for him. Tested the poison on condemned prisoners first to get the dosage right, by the way.
He ran clinical trials.
For murder.
And then, and this is the part that gets me, Nero was so satisfied that he helped Locust to open a school. A school for poisoners.
A school? Like what was the curriculum?
Intro to ASNEC 101.
Advanced Mushroom Studies.
We don't have the syllabus, unfortunately. But the fact that it existed tells you something about how normalized poisoning was as a political tool. It wasn't some shadowy underground thing. It was a skill set. A profession.
So at this point in history, poison is basically just a weapon anyone can use and nobody can detect.
Right, and that brings us to what I think is the most important era in this whole story. The Age of Arsenic. Roughly the 1500s through the 1800s.
Arsenic, the classic.
Arsenic trioxide specifically, white powder, odorless, tasteless, dissolves completely in water, symptoms mimic color and other common diseases. It was the perfect murder weapon for literally 300 years, and the French had a nickname for it.
What they call it?
Powder de succession. Inheritance powder.
Inheritance powder.
Because you used it to speed up your inheritance.
That's the most French thing I've ever heard.
The Borgias allegedly turned dinner parties into weapons. Invite your rivals. Serve the wine. Estates revert to the papal treasury. But the story I really want to tell you is about a woman named Giulia Tifana in 1630s Rome.
Okay.
Giulia created a product called Aqua Tifana. It was an arsenic-based solution, sold in small vials, disguised as a cosmetic product, and she sold it specifically to women who were trapped in abusive marriages.
Oh wow. That changes the framing completely.
Right. Because you have to understand the context. In 17th century Rome, women had essentially no legal mechanism to leave a marriage. No divorce. No protection orders. If your husband was beating you, your options were endure it or well. Giulia offered a third option. An estimated 600 men died from Aqua Tifana before she was finally caught in 1659.
So was she a serial killer or, like, an underground liberator? That's a genuinely hard question.
And it's a question that maps onto a bigger debate about poison throughout history. Poison was called the woman's weapon for centuries, which is a deeply sexist framing, but it reflects a reality where poison was often the only weapon available to people without physical power or legal standing, the powerless person's equalizer.
That's heavy. So how does humanity get from we can't even tell if someone was poisoned to actual science?
Two people, and this is where we get into the real alchemy to science transition. First, Paracelsus.
I remember that name from the alchemy episode.
Born in 1493. And I need to give you his full name because it's important. Philippus Aureolus Theophrastus Bombastus von Hohenheim.
I'm sorry, did you say Bombastus? Like the word bombastic.
The word bombastic may literally derive from this man's name. He was that kind of person. Loud, arrogant, confrontational. He'd publicly burned the works of Galen, the physician whose theories had dominated medicine for over 1,000 years, just set them on fire in front of his students.
Power move. Unhinged, but a power move.
And here's where I want to use a metaphor that I think fits perfectly. You know how in Skyrim, the alchemy system works?
Oh yeah.
You pick ingredients like nightshade, deathbowl, whatever, and depending on what you combine them with, the exact same ingredient can make a healing potion or a lethal poison.
The ingredient doesn't change.
The recipe does.
That's Paracelsus's entire insight, distilled into a game mechanic. He coined the single most important sentence in the history of toxicology. All things are poison and nothing is without poison. Only the dose makes a thing not a poison.
The dose makes the poison.
Everything is toxic. Water will kill you if you drink 6 liters in a short period. Hyponatremia. Your sodium levels crash. Your brain swells. And everything is medicine if you dose it correctly. The substance is the Skyrim ingredient. The dose is the recipe. Same nightshade, totally different potion.
And this was radical because before him, they thought what?
That some things were inherently healing and some were inherently harmful.
They followed Galen's humoral theory. Disease was caused by an imbalance of four bodily fluids. Blood, phlegm, yellow bile, black bile. Treatment was about rebalancing. Paracelsus said no, diseases are caused by specific chemical agents, and you treat them with specific chemical interventions. He saw alchemy not as turning lead into gold. He saw it as the art of refining raw substances, separating what's useful from what's poisonous in the same material.
So he's basically the first person to say medicine is chemistry. Not vibes, not humors, not balancing your cosmic juices. Chemistry.
And this is where I think the Bloodborne insight mechanic really clicks. In Bloodborne, as you gain insight, as you learn more about the eldritch reality behind the world, you can perceive things that were always there but invisible to you. New enemies appear. The world changes. But that same knowledge makes you more vulnerable. Your frenzy resistance drops. The more you see, the more the madness can get you.
Right, the insight meter is a blessing and a curse simultaneously.
High insight means you understand the world better, but you're also closer to losing your mind.
That's the dangerous knowledge problem at the heart of toxicology. Paracelsus understood chemistry well enough to cure people, but that same understanding made it easier to kill people. Every advance in pharmacology is also an advance in poisoning. You cannot have one without the other. The knowledge is inherently dual use.
Pharmakon again, the word that means both.
Exactly, and Paracelsus himself might be the perfect example. Brilliant, revolutionary, changed medicine forever, dead at 47 under mysterious circumstances. Some historians think he was poisoned by his enemies or possibly by himself from handling too many toxic compounds.
The father of toxicology potentially killed by toxicity.
That's poetic in the worst way.
Now, the second person who changed everything. James Marsh, 1836. He's a chemist, and he's furious because he just watched a murder walk free.
What happened?
A man was accused of arsenic poisoning. A chemist had found arsenic in the evidence. But by the time the case got to trial, the chemical sample had decomposed. The jury couldn't see the proof. The guy walked.
The evidence literally expired.
That's insane.
Marsh went back to his lab and said, essentially, never again. He developed the Marsh test, the first reliable chemical test for arsenic. You take a sample from the victim's body, add zinc and sulfuric acid, heat it, and if arsenic is present, it deposits as a distinctive metallic mirror on a glass plate. Detects as little as 1/50th of a milligram.
1/50th of a milligram. So suddenly you can't hide arsenic anymore.
In the first major trial that used it, 1840, France. Marie Laferge, accused of poisoning her husband with arsenic cake, became a national sensation. The chemist demonstrated the Marsh test in the courtroom. It was the first CSI moment in legal history. The jury watched science prove murder in real time.
That must have been electrifying.
Like, imagine being in that courtroom.
And here's what's really interesting. The Marsh test didn't just solve murders. It prevented them. Arsenic poisoning rates dropped after the test became widely known. Because now killers knew they'd get caught, the detection technology itself was the deterrent.
The existence of the test was the antidote, not chemistry fighting chemistry, awareness fighting chemistry.
Which brings us to the modern world, where the pharmacon duality is everywhere. And I mean everywhere. You know, Botox?
Yeah, people inject it into their forehead so they don't get wrinkles.
Botulinum toxin, the single most lethal substance known to humanity. A few nanograms can kill you. And 7.4 million cosmetic procedures use it every year. The therapeutic dose is about 30 international units. The lethal dose, 3,000. A hundredfold margin between looking younger and being dead.
That's the Skyrim alchemy system in real life.
Same ingredient, wildly different outcomes based on dosage.
Or how about warfarin, one of the most commonly prescribed blood thinners in the world. Millions of people take it daily to prevent strokes and blood clots. It was developed in 1948 as rat poison.
I'm sorry. People are taking rat poison, medicinally, on purpose.
Different dose, different potion, or digitalis, comes from foxglove, a plant that will absolutely stop your heart if you eat enough of it, but at the right dose. It's been regulating heartbeats since the 1700s. And then there's the biggest one, chemotherapy.
Oh no,
I think I see where this is going.
Every single chemotherapy drug is, by definition, a poison. The entire discipline of oncology is, and I'm not being hyperbolic here, poisoning the cancer slightly faster than you poison the patient. That's the game. That's the Witcher toxicity meter in real life. You're chugging potions that would kill a normal person, hoping your body can handle it longer than the tumor can.
That's actually kind of beautiful and terrifying. Like the oncologist is literally playing the toxicity meter, pushing it as high as they can without hitting the threshold.
And there's a modern scientific concept that takes this even further. Hormesis, the idea that low doses of toxic substances can actually be beneficial. Not just tolerable, actively good for you. They stimulate adaptive cellular responses.
Wait, so a tiny amount of something harmful can make you stronger?
Exercise is technically hormesis. You're damaging your muscles, creating micro-tears, producing oxidative stress, and your body rebuilds them stronger. Mithridates was doing hormesis 2,000 years ago. He just didn't have the word for it.
The ancient king running the same protocol that exercise science uses today, without the peer review.
And here is where it connects to right now. Microdosing psychedelics, taking sub-perceptual doses of psilocybin or LSD for therapeutic benefit. That's modern mithridatism. Snake venom research is producing promising drugs for blood pressure and pain management. CRISPR gene editing faces the exact same pharmac in duality. It's a cure or a weapon depending on who's holding it and what dose of modification they apply. And remember our episode about peptides.
Episode 118, the knee peptide investigation.
Same territory. That whole gray area between supplement and medicine, between therapeutic and dangerous. It's the pharmacon boundary. It's always been the pharmacon boundary.
You know what gets me? We did the episode about poison code dependencies, episode 85, the supply chain attacks one.
And the fish and kill chain in episode 111.
And in both of those, we used poison as a metaphor for digital attacks.
But it turns out the metaphor was way more precise than we realized.
The actual history of actual poison follows the exact same pattern.
An invisible substance, undetectable by the victim, that exploits trust in your food, trust in your wine, trust in your cosmetics.
The attack vector is always trust. Whether it's a poisoned mushroom at a Roman dinner party or poisoned NPM package in your code repository, the mechanism is identical. You trust the source, so you consume without testing.
And the defense is the same too.
The MASH test for ASIC is basically antivirus software, a detection system that makes the attack visible. And once people know detection exists, the attack rate drops.
That's a really sharp observation. The MASH test was the first cybersecurity tool, just for, you know, actual murder instead of digital murder.
I keep coming back to Paracelsus's principle though, the dose makes the poison.
It feels like one of those fundamental laws that applies to everything.
Information, a little is empowering, too much is paralyzing.
Remember the attention span episode?
Same idea.
Freedom, a little is essential, too much is chaos.
Even like AI. We've talked about this a bunch. A little AI augmentation is transformative.
Too much, and you get the bloat economy from episode 96.
I think that's why the Greeks had one word for it. They understood intuitively what it took Paracelsus another 2,000 years to formalize, that healing and harm aren't opposites. They're the same force at different intensities. The pharmacon isn't two things. It's one thing with a dial.
And humanity spent 3,000 years learning to read the dial.
And we're still learning. Every new drug, every new technology, every new capability, we have to find the dose all over again. The line between cure and kill never stays in the same place.
So what's next?
You've got me thinking about all these substances that walk the line.
Well, we talked a lot about how poison was the invisible weapon for centuries, right? And how detection, the MASH test, changed everything. I want to go deeper on that, because there's this incredible history of forensic science. Not just toxicology, but all of it. Fingerprints, blood spatter, DNA, the entire story of how we learned to make the invisible visible. Crime scene investigation before it was a TV show.
The origin story of forensics, from what Sherlock Holmes era to modern DNA labs.
Even earlier, and weirder than you'd think, some of the pioneers were as eccentric as Paracelsus.
I'm extremely in. All right, everyone, that's our show. Thanks for hanging out with us.
If you like this one, drop us a review, share it with someone who would enjoy learning that their blood thinner started as rat poison.
That fact alone is worth a share.
We'll see you next time. Stay curious, stay weird, and remember, the dose makes the poison.
Later, everyone.